Welcome back to the FKT Podcast. I'm your host, Heather Anderson. Today, I'm joined by Paulina Zeck to talk about her 54-day, 9-hour, and 48-minute self-supported Tayarara FKT. Well, thank you so much, Paulina, for coming on the show today. I'm excited to chat with you.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm super excited. I'm also excited because it's my first podcast I'm doing in English, so bear with me.
Oh, well, you're doing great, so I don't think it'll be a problem. Would like to start out by talking about the route itself. We've had Carl Sabe on to talk about his Tayarara hike. So our listeners are somewhat familiar with the route, but I was wondering if you could just give us a little bit of a recap of what the Tayarara Trail is like.
To me, the Tayarara is pretty wild, like literally, because there's so many things that come unexpected, especially the South Island is the island that's way more remote, where you have all the alpine areas, the high mountains, the many, many river crossings. There's many sections that actually get skipped a lot by normal hikers because they're just overgrown, boggy, uneven. So it's a bit of an adventure and a challenge because there's just many logistics, I guess, that you have to take care of. It's not not like your AT where you have signs every now and then, but you'll have to find your way more often. You have to book ferries. You have to look for the tides. There's even shuttles you have to take. So it's a big adventure, and it's a young trail compared to other trails. I think it opened in 2011, so it's still, you know, there's the route is changing still. There's many road sections in the North Island, so they are trying to get rid of some of that. But yeah, it's New Zealand is so diverse. You literally get everything. You get jungle, you get alpine, you have all those river crossings, you have beach sections, you have roads, you have cities. So it's a bit of everything, really.
I have not hiked the Tayarara, but I have been to New Zealand, and that kind of encapsulates my experience there very well. You know, you can be on this lovely trail and it just ends into the jungle and you're just like, I don't know now.
Yes, exactly.
I guess the trail is now this river. I'm going to walk through that for a while. And then, you know, a few more hours, you're up in the alpine. And yeah, it is. It's very, very changeable terrain.
But that's what I love about it.
Yeah, it definitely keeps you on your toes. It's constantly engaging. So, I mean, maybe this isn't your first FKT, but it's the first one we have recorded on our site. I'd love if you could talk about your motivation for attempting this FKT, you know, such a huge trail as your first FKT, and to do it also self-supported rather than supported.
It was actually my first FKT, and it was my second time hiking the TA. My first through hike back in 2019-20 was the TA, and I kind of fell in love with it. The first trail I knew was the Appalachian Trail, but then time-wise, I had to do some research about what trails were possible to hike in our winter, basically. And that's one of the few you can do, a few of the really long ones. And then it was actually, it just came step by step. The first time I was on the TA, I actually ran into Lucy Clark, who said the supported FKT back then. And that's how I learned about FKTs. And then I hiked the Appalachian Trail in 2023. And I just realized over time that I'm capable of doing long distances and long days. And I actually had fun doing that. And that's pretty much how I came up with it. I was like, maybe I can do it. And I would have looked at other trails before, like the PCT was always interesting to me, but it was always a question of timing for me, and I didn't mind going back to New Zealand, and I was free in February and March last year. That's why I decided to go back to New Zealand, and it was, I don't know, I didn't prepare for it a lot, to be quite honest with you. It was a phase of my life that was very turbulent, I would say, and I was just ready to go out there again, and I didn't even tell a lot of people about what I wanted to do. And here where I live, I don't live in the mountains. I live in a big city in Germany, so I don't have that environment of people who run or hike all the time. So it's like nobody can really relate. So I was just like, yeah, I'm going to New Zealand. I'm going to hike the trail again. I'll be doing it northbound this time, because last time I did it southbound, how most people do it. And I was locked in. In my mind, there was no option of not doing it. It was more of a mental thing. I think that I thought, I want to go out there and I really want this right now and I need this right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked out, yeah.
And so did you choose to go northbound just because you wanted to do it a different way than you did last time? Or was there some sort of strategic aspect with regard to the FKT?
Well, that was one of the reasons, because I just wanted to change. And then it was also a little bit about the timing, because February, March in New Zealand is almost late summer and the South Island starts to get the bad weather earlier. And it's the island where you really don't want bad weather. So I thought it's smarter to go that way. And then also, usually you would say that the South Island is the more challenging. So in my mind, I was like, let's get this over with first. Turned out that the North Island and all the road walking was definitely harder on my feet. But yeah, those were the reasons why I walked northbound.
Obviously, an FKT is a very kind of different way of doing a through hike, and you were going the other direction. But how was it different from a normal through hike? Because obviously you still did this self-supported. How did it differ?
Oh yeah, I forgot about that question about self-supported and supported. I was never thinking about doing it supported. I wouldn't even dare to ask anybody to support me. It's just not never say never, but it's my style is doing it self-supported. It was very different to my other through hikes in terms of being more by myself, for sure, because I obviously didn't have a trail family or anything like that. Then most people, like I said, hike the trail southbound. So after a couple of weeks, I was pretty much by myself on trail. There was not a single other hiker that I ran into, or more day hikers or section hikers, but not really. So that was very different. But for me, it was actually, I thought it was good because I didn't get distracted by anything. I did my long days. I hiked all day long. I didn't do any breaks or anything like that. So obviously it was different in that terms the first time I went. And also the Appalachian Trail was a lot more social, a lot more chilling in the huts at night and stuff like that.
And, you know, you mentioned, you know, you're kind of hiking all day. Were you ever running, or was this just you were hiking every day and just putting in a lot of long hours?
I like to call it speed hiking. I was speed hiking most of the time, especially in the beginning. I wasn't really running at all. I'd say later on, I did quite a bit of running, but mostly the downhills, really.
Yeah, I think for me, it's definitely hard to kind of switch between the two, unless you are gravity assisted on the downhill. So how far were you hiking, or how many miles per day or kilometers per day were you covering when you were doing your FKT?
I'll have to convert. I did like 57 kilometers a day, which is about 35, 36 miles, I guess, with my longest days being around 55 miles. And then there was a few days. One time I got bitten by a spider, which is random because New Zealand isn't known for its dangerous spiders, but I had to take it very slow for 3 days. And then another time I was dealing with a gastritis for a couple of days. So there was just a few days where I had to take it a little bit slower. So there were then other days where I had to put in some more miles. Yes.
Yeah. Okay, tell me about this spider bite, because I didn't even realize that New Zealand had dangerous spiders.
It wasn't dangerous, like it wasn't life-threatening at all, but it was so random because I was in a very overgrown forest. It was actually raining And I had my calf sleeves on. And then suddenly I just felt that sting in my calf.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't see anything flying around because I thought it must have been some mosquito thing or anything like that. But yeah, I had to stop in the next town. And then I talked to people and we did some research and everybody said it was probably they call it white-tailed spider. It's not like really dangerous at all. It's just more like a bee sting. It was just very, very swollen and red. And yeah, it was my calf, so I couldn't really walk on it I did 20, 30 kilometers those couple days, but it was fine afterwards. It just slowed me down. But yeah, the chances of getting bitten by a spider are as high as getting bitten by a spider over here in Germany or probably in the US too.
Right. Yeah, I mean, definitely when I think about being concerned about spider bites, in that part of the world. I think about Australia, but I don't really think about New Zealand.
Yeah. No, New Zealand actually doesn't have any dangerous animals, really.
Right.
Cows probably are the most threatening.
Right. Or apparently dogs, because Kawasabe got bitten by, he didn't get bitten by a dog, but his pacer did.
Yes.
Yeah. True. Did you have any issues with dogs or any other wildlife? Besides the spider?
No. And this is one section where everybody warns you about the dogs, but I managed that. I had some cow encounters that were interesting. But, you know, not really threatening at all. But, you know, sometimes in the trail notes, it even says, oh, be prepared. Today you will hike through some fields. And if you see a bull by itself, that's probably a sign that it's aggressive. And I'm like, why would you build the trail right there where there's aggressive bulls, but the trail literally puts you through those sections. But I don't know, nothing happened. So,
right.
And then they have a lot of possums, but they don't do anything. They just want to steal your food.
Right. Yeah. I hate it when they route trails through areas and then they just tell you like, oh, and by the way, there's this dangerous animal that hangs out here. And I'm like, can you put this somewhere else then?
Exactly. There was one time where where you cross a golf court and the trail notes say, beware of flying golf balls. I'm like, okay, cool.
Right. Yeah. You're just like walking through with, you know, your hands up ready to.
But that's the TA. You never know what to expect.
Right. Yeah. Aside from the spider bite and the gastritis, did you have any other injuries or illnesses or anything out there? Or did you manage to stay pretty healthy?
No, except for that, I managed to stay pretty healthy. I was actually feeling very, very good, especially for the first month. And like I said, I didn't prepare a lot for it. So at some point, I was just getting very thin, which was not very good. But it was at a point where I ended the South Island and moved up to the North Island. And fortunately, the North Island has a lot more civilization and the stretches are shorter. So there was a lot more food options. That was good. And then only in the last 3 days, I developed shin splints. But, you know, I couldn't wait it out. So I worked on that for the last couple of days. And that was fine afterwards. But other than that, I was actually surprised how well my body held up with everything.
You mentioned a little bit about losing some weight and the availability of food on the North Island. So could you talk a little bit more about your resupply and your nutrition? I know obviously you said you didn't do a lot of planning, but how did it end up looking? How often were you getting food and what were you eating? Was it just kind of what you normally eat when you're through hiking or did you make changes to your diet because of the intensity?
In the beginning, yes, it was what I would normally eat on a through hike. So I ate ramen all the time. I ate a lot of tuna wraps. I ate a bunch of bars and oats and just that stuff. And you have long sections in the south, so you'd resupply every 3, 4, or 5 days. And there's not always a big grocery store. So that's kind of how I developed my gastritis at the end of the South Island, because I didn't have any variation in my nutrition and probably a big lack of vitamins and any other supplements. So I was just very naive with that, I guess, and just eating what I was used to eat. But then, yeah, like I said, it changed in the North Island because there was just so much more food. And because the stretches were shorter, I was just putting pizza and burgers and all you can think of basically in my backpack. It's not that that's healthy at all, but it was had more calories. So that's good.
Right. Yeah. More calories, more variety.
Yes.
Yeah, I definitely figured that out pretty early on in just in my regular through hiking, but especially when you're doing more of an FKT or like a faster hike where you don't have a lot of time to spend in town, you can really quickly fall behind not only on calories but nutrition, because, you know, on a normal through hike, maybe you'd go into town and you'd eat two or three meals in town, you eat a whole bunch of variety of food and kind of make up for those nutritional deficits. But if you're just staying on the trail, it's, yeah, vitamins are important.
Yeah, totally. I was also only cold soaking, so I feel like I had even fewer options, but I also feel like I ate so much, like I was eating constantly all day long, and still after a month I was looking like a different person.
It's very hard to eat enough. Eating has to be pretty much a full-time job.
Yeah, I totally do that different probably if I ever want to do it again.
Can you talk a little bit about your gear, what you took, but also how that differed from what your standard gear would be, like maybe what you carried on your first TA through hike, what the differences were?
I went a lot lighter. I would have to convert that again. But I had 5 kilos this time. And the first two hikes that I did, I just didn't really care. I didn't spend a lot of money on very expensive or ultralight gear. So I always had more than 10 kilos probably on my back. And this time I mean, it was summer, so I didn't have to take a lot of clothes. I went for a super light tarp instead of a tent. The advantage in New Zealand is that in the South Island, you have all those backcountry huts. So there was only very few times where I actually had to pitch my tarp. And then I did a lot of cowboy camping, especially in the South. And then in the North, I actually also slept in a lot of hostels or motels and stuff like that. Yeah, other than that, it was basically what you would take on a through hike, but just very reduced. Like I didn't take any luxury items at all. I can get around with very, very few things, I'd say, clothing wise, but also everything else really. So, and that was a big advantage to have a very light pack. It wasn't disturbing at all.
Could you talk a little bit more about the huts and lodging, because I'm not sure if most of our listeners are familiar with that. Maybe they're familiar with more like the AT shelters. So maybe you could talk a little bit more about what the New Zealand hut system is like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. The huts are different to the shelters on the AT because they are enclosed. They have a door and they are actually quite nice. Like usually they sleep 10, sometimes even 15 people. They have like a little table sitting area, maybe sometimes even a little kitchen area. There's no electricity or anything like that, but it's just a safe room basically. And everybody who hikes the TA has to get a hut pass basically. So when you're on trail, you're allowed to use all those huts for free. Kind of like on the AT, you're allowed to use all the shelters. But the huts in New Zealand are, like I said, mostly on the South Island. So on the North Island, the TA, I think, only has one or a couple huts. But it's very practical because especially when you're out in the high mountains, the weather can get really rough, can get very windy, very wet. So it's really nice to have those huts around.
Yeah, when I was in New Zealand, I was very impressed by their huts. They were so clean and so nice when you're used to the things down like the Appalachian Trail. The huts in New Zealand were very nice.
Yes, absolutely.
Can you talk a little bit about the navigation and maybe how you did your tracking?
Yeah, I also used Far Out. Like I would on the AT. But there are some stretches where that doesn't really help a lot because it's just so overgrown, or there's a riverbed where you just have to find your way. There's no, if you follow the red line, it doesn't get you anywhere. So it's at sometimes it's just trying to find a way and going with your gut. Or, I mean, nowadays the TA has a lot more hikers than it used to have a few years ago. So those overgrown boggy sections sometimes are kind of walked through, so you can find your way in, yeah, that way. But like I said, there's a couple of sections most hikers skip and they get you aggressive. I was like fighting my way through the forest because there's just no visible trail. They have this plant called cutty grass, which is literally what it sounds like. It cuts you open. So it's, there's some rough parts, and navigating isn't always easy, but it's also like, I didn't get lost a bunch of times. So you'll find your way. It's just sometimes more of a guessing, and then you'll find your way through it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, there's always a way through. Yeah. It just might not be nice.
Exactly.
Would you say the navigation was the most difficult aspect of this FKT?
Probably not. I was feeling very confident because I hiked the trail before, so I kind of know what I'm doing. I know the logistics, so I didn't really care about making any plans about that. And in the end, it worked out well. I'd say because the first time I hiked the TA, I actually skipped some of the roads and I didn't realize how hard that would be on your feet doing every single road. There would be full days where you just walk on concrete. So I thought that was hard. The tight planning sometimes is really annoying, especially when you're doing an FKT. There was times where I had to get up at, I don't know, 3 a.m. just because low tide is at 4 a.m. or 4 p.m. And then you're like, oh, well, might as well take the first low tide. Stuff like that. It's more of the logistical problems, but I was able to manage them along the way.
What was your highest high and your lowest low?
Ooh, that's a good question. I'll start with my lowest low because it's probably what I just talked about, the time when that one section was just really rough. There was just nothing nice to see. And there was also the time where I had quite of a mental breakdown, I'd say. Getting too much in touch with topics and things that actually had nothing to lose on the trail, and they were in my head a lot. And there was some days where I just straight up cried and screamed into the forest, which was nice to have at that time. But there was probably a week or a couple towards the end where I was just mentally not in the right place, and then the trail wasn't great at the same time, so it was just a bit harder.
That's a bad combination.
Yes. It made a shift again towards the very end, so that's good. The whole of the South Island, really, my spirits were so high. I was just in the best mood. I was singing all day long. I was just having the time of my life. So I'd have to think about the highest high, like what it was especially, but I'm just thinking about the whole of the South Island, really. The first month, I was just the happiest person on earth to be back on trail, to just be with myself, to see that everything worked out.
That's always a good feeling when you just, there's just a lot of joy in the day-to-day.
Yes.
So what was your biggest takeaway overall from this FKT? What was your big takeaway from it?
My biggest takeaway was probably that it's important to trust in myself, and that I can trust myself and believe in myself. Because especially with the through hiking topic, like I said, there's not a lot of people around me who can relate to that. So there's nobody who will know better or who will tell you, yes, you can do that. Now, I was so happy that I made that step and that I was just, that I just said to myself, hell yes, I'm just doing this and there's no way I'm quitting and I'm so locked in and I can do it. So it was a lot about getting in touch with myself again after having been through a rough time before and to know that, yeah, to know that I can believe in myself and that I'm a strong person for doing that.
Yeah, definitely. I think that pushing yourself or challenging yourself can really help you in the future with remembering, oh, you know, I can do difficult things. I can trust myself and definitely can teach you that.
Yes.
So now that you've done this big, big FKT, do you have any more FKTs planned? Or were you, when you got done with this, been like, well, one and done?
No. I mean, as of now, I'm recovering from a knee injury, so I haven't been running or hiking for a few or like, say, 3 months. So I have to fix that first. But yes, I definitely want to do another one. I'm still looking at the PCT at some point. I mean, somebody has to break your record at some point.
At some point.
I don't know when, but it's always been a trail that I wanted to do. Yeah, I don't know. There's other trails in Europe that I'm very interested in, like the Kungsleden, or I haven't seen much of the Alps really. So yeah, no, this one, it wouldn't have been my last one probably. And I'm more leaning towards the long self-supported FKTs. I'm also getting into trail running, but I'm not a pro trail runner. So I won't be setting the really short day FKTs. I think, yeah, my thing is the self-supported long ones probably.
Yeah. Well, I look forward to whatever comes next and, you know, definitely reach out if you decide to tackle the PCT.
Thank you.
Yeah, and thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you very much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Thanks again, Paulina, for coming on the show. You can read about her FKT on the website, fastestknowntime.com, and follow her adventures on Instagram at linazac.